All right, I am calling the Champaign County Mental Health Board meeting to order. Can I get a roll call, please?
Lisa Liggins Chambers.
Present.
Chris Miner. He was here.
We might need to vote him in because he's on Zoom.
Molly McClay. Joe Omosagie.
Yep.
Elaine Quincia. Jen Straub.
Yes.
Jane Sprandel.
Here.
John Paul Joachim.
Here. All right. With that, I will move for a motion to allow other board members that are not able to be here in person due to extenuating circumstances such as illness. I wait to do one person at a time. Oh, okay. So I'll move for a motion to allow Chris Miner to attend the Mental Health Board meeting virtually. Is there a second for that?
I will second that.
All right. With that, all those in favor, say aye.
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 All those against, same sign. Motion passes. So Chris is allowed to participate in the meeting today.
Thank you.
The next item is approval of the agenda. We do have a lot on there.
Yes, there is a lot.
I make a motion to accept the agenda as presented.
I second.
With that, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those same sign.
Aye.
All right. Motion passes. Next item is the Mental Health Board timeline on pages 3 through 7. No action is needed for this. So the next meeting will be next week, which will be a study session. Unless we want to cancel it. If there is nothing no presentations or anything that we have next week, then do we have to move a motion to cancel that?
No, you can do it.
Then I will hereby cancel next week's meeting.
Yay.
Okay, so the next meeting will be on March 20th. Hopefully be warm just like today. And then any questions about the timeline? So it looks like we have, the opening of the applications was December 22nd. The applications were closed on February 12th. The application submission deadline was February 12th. So staff will be looking at those and presenting us those in the following months. So we'll have a lot of reviewing to do. On to the next thing is the citizen input and public participation. All are welcome to attend the board's meeting to observe and offer thoughts and input during this time. We'll limit public participation to 5 minutes a person, 20 minutes total. If there's any participant that wants to come up and speak, now's the time. Okay. Seeing none, we'll move on to the chairperson's comments. I'll just keep it short. Basically, the next few months are going to be a lot of discussion and reviewing of applications. So we'll have a lot of long discussions ahead. Hopefully, we'll be able to make decisions that hopefully not as tough as they were last year, but we'll see how things go. So with that, I'll move on to Lynn's comments.
It's always tough. Decisions are tough. I decided to put my comments on a post-it note to try to keep them brief, and then that didn't actually work this morning. I thought that'll do it, but it doesn't. So I just two categories of thing. I was at 6 consecutive days of conferences, full days. Most of the topics are like the stuff we talk about, overdose deaths and suicide and trauma. And I do not recommend 6 solid days of that. It took me actually took me a weekend to find the positives to share with you, because I think you deserve the positives. The first positive is that a couple of years ago, this administration directed all of the federal agencies across the federal departments to start talking to each other, like leave your office, go down the hall, just pass the bathroom and talk to someone in a completely different department about all of the shared priorities in all these federal agencies. They have to have their separate funding streams, but they're all pointing toward the same problems. And so that is really obvious now, 2 years later, that they've actually been talking to each other. It was great. It was so much collaboration across departments that all the federal agency leaders that usually come and talk to us during these meetings were kind of saying the same stuff. So yay for them. And I don't know that it really like brings immediate relief to Champaign County, which is what I'm there for. But some other things that happened were really remarkable. And that is, the main obligation that I have at the National Association of Counties is to the Health Steering Committee. And over the years, I've watched this group of primarily its elected county officials across the country go from getting excited only about nursing home regulations to a whole bunch of stuff that's important to all of us, to like climate issues and mental health and substance use disorders and even DD. It's kind of wild. Like, they don't know as much as some of the other people in the room, the appointed ones who've been at their jobs for 30 years, but they're pounding the table for all the right things. That was really heartening. And the fact that they're talking about DD at all is amazing. So then the second conference is the National Association of County Behavioral Health and DD Directors. And in the last 2 years, they've just kind of made the decision to include DD in every session somehow, even if it's a little bit of a stretch, but it's like just under the banner of like, this is how you include people with intellectual disabilities. You just talk about them, even if the program is like only sort of related. They did it, and that was amazing. And some of it's quite deep too, like a conference that's going to be held that's a joint effort of some of the national associations that work on mental health and DD. People with dual diagnosis are pretty greatly underserved everywhere because our systems separate them. So there was some nice talk about training. HRSA, which is the main funder of federally qualifying health centers such as Promise Healthcare, has developed some training programs, especially about working with people who have autism. These are training for healthcare providers and mental health care providers in the care of people with autism, and the main trainers are the parents of those people with autism, which is like, wow, how smart, right? So that was very... Those sessions were super exciting, but one thing that was also really cool is we kicked off that second conference with a session featuring, I think it was called Introducing the New Workforce, and it was four quite young people, two of them were still in college, talking about what inspired them to come into this field and what were the barriers that might make it difficult for them to stay in the field. And it was almost all money, like, you know, scholarship and loan repayment programs are great, but they still have licensure fees and certification. Those are an issue. Even if they know they're moving into a fairly low-paying profession, they didn't really care about that so much as they couldn't get there because of the licensure fees. And then a little bit also about supervisors maybe not being prepared to support them. I thought that was amazing. It's not, you know, it's stuff everybody here knows, but yay, some broad recognition of that. Anyway, that's all on topic A. Topic B is that we have done a little bit of work on the applications already, the applications for funding, and I can talk to you more about that as we get into the agenda. And like, I don't know. I think this will be a really cool meeting. I know it's not the best attended, but we have a really important presentation, and so I will stop talking now so we can get to it. Okay. Thanks.
Thanks, Lynn. So with that, we'll move on to the approval of the Mental Health Board meeting minutes on pages 21 through 27.
It's very minor, but on page 22, for the meeting minutes review, it actually has 11/15 of 2024 instead of 23, which, again, no big deal. I How I caught that's beyond me.
With that, is there a motion to approve the minutes from January 17th and the 24th?
I motion to approve.
All right. Is there a second?
Second.
All right. With that, any discussion? Seeing none other than what Jane had already stipulated, I'll move for a voice vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Next item is the vendor voice list on pages 28 through 38.
I can move to accept the vendor voice list.
Is there a second for that?
A second.
All right. Any discussion? All right. Although, because this is already stuff we already approved, we don't have to do a roll call, right?
It's not
okay.
Authorized to spend.
Yeah.
Already spent.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, same sign. Motion passes. We'll move on to staff reports on pages 39 through 55. I think one of the questions I had looking through this was going through like Kim's report that the expo is being planned for October 26th, and then they have contacted three ASL interpreters for the event. But do we have any like translators for like Spanish or French?
Because
working on that. Okay, because I saw that you have a flyer that's in Spanish. I just didn't know if we had translators for that. Okay.
This is the first year in many years that we've known that we've been able to set the date and start planning this early. So Kim develops a lot of the consulting contracts and just got on it, like contacted the people who usually do the ASL interpretation. Only one of them replied. So we don't have this all locked down, but we have contracts prepared. The Spanish language interpretation was provided for free by Immigrant Services at last year's expo, so we haven't made any call. Maybe she has, but there's still a lot to do in that area. Thank you for asking about that.
And I just really liked Leon's staff report where he talked about the Reentry Housing Coalition meeting. So the first coalition meeting on January 30th, and there was about 15 to 20 agencies, and they discussed starting a resource bank for shared information on housing, employment, legal matters, other necessities. So I think that's a great thing for agencies to be able to share and have a resource list for information for all those people that come in from the county, for all those that come to those agencies for resources on all kinds of things, including housing, and I think that's very important. And then I guess the only other thing was, did we get any updates on any of those like outstanding audits or anything like that?
We just got one today.
Since these were reported in the report.
Yeah, we got one of them today. That's Stephanie's report. So we have all those quarterly reports, I think, are done. But audits, we've got
Grow came in today.
Yeah, and we got family service a while ago. And then First Followers, probably right after you wrote this.
Yeah.
So, and I've reviewed everything that's come in and followed up, and I think, you know, we're having a conversation with First Followers because they have to do another version of the audit, even though this one was approved. So we are still waiting for Promise, Women in Need Recovery, the Refugee Center, and Christian Health, and then the three that are not funded this year, which are Macy, the Well Experience, and Urbana Neighborhood Connections.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you for that. The next item will be the new business, which is on pages 56 through 85. It's the CSPH strategic plan with Katie Harmon.
Thank you so much. Let me go ahead and pull up my presentation here. All right. We can all see that? We're good? Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you so much for having me. I have my phone here so I can be mindful of my time. So I'm Katie Harmon. I'm the coordinator for the Champaign County Continuum of Service Providers to the Homeless. And I really wanted to share some information about the Continuum of Service Providers to the Homeless for those who don't know about our group. And then we recently developed and approved a 3-year strategic plan at the end of 2023. So we're really trying to get out there and share with the community some priority areas that we're going to be working on over the next 3 years. For those who don't know, the Continuum of Service Providers to the Homeless is essentially the Department of Housing and Urban Development's continuum of care for Champaign County. And really, in a nutshell, what we are responsible for is coordinating and planning a response to homelessness in our county. So there's, you know, over 400 continuums across the country. We're one of 19 in the state of Illinois. Some are multi-county continuums of care. We're just a one county covering Champaign County. And this is just provides a little more context. We're really focused on providing outreach, engagement, and assessment to make sure that people experiencing homelessness and those at risk of homelessness have adequate services and supports here in Champaign County. So the Continuum of Service Providers of the Homeless, or the CSPH, I know it's another acronym, but that's what we go by. We also are responsible for essentially three different pools of funding that come directly through our continuum. So one of those pools of funding is from the federal government through the Department of Housing and Urban Development. And then there's two sources of funding coming through the Illinois Department of Human Services. One of those sources of funding was new as of last year. The state of Illinois developed a separate office last year, the Illinois Office to Prevent and End Homelessness. And with that office and initiative, there was increased funding coming into our community, which is excellent. So we anticipate that being another continued source of funding for homeless services for our community. So who is participating in our group? Right now, I believe we have a total of 42 member organizations. So I'm really pleased with the participation and our collective efforts. So we have homeless service providers, victim service providers, faith-based organizations, our local government, local municipalities, housing advocates, healthcare, other nonprofits, public housing, and then also individuals with lived experience of homelessness. So really, any organization or person who has an interest in working in our initiatives to address homelessness in Champaign County is welcome to participate in our group. We meet monthly currently, and we also have some subcommittees of our continuum of two to address specific initiatives. This is our mission statement here. It kind of summarized what I've already shared with you all, but I wanted to have it on a slide here. And we recently updated our mission statement to last year. So as far as our strategic plan, for about the last couple of years, we really wanted to have more focused efforts on what we want to be working on the next 3 years. So we had a strategic planning committee that met regularly to develop the plan. We also got input and buy-in from our full membership. We had an in-person meeting in collaboration with the United Way to share a strategic plan as well when it was still in the draft stages and get some feedback from the folks participating in that homeless services summit. So with that said, we officially voted on and approved our strategic plan, and we really wanted to focus on narrowing down our focus area. So I say that to say, we've identified 5 priority areas that we're going to be focused on over the next 5 years. You know, this is obviously not an exhaustive list. There are so many areas that we could focus on in terms of addressing homelessness. The list is really never ending, but we really wanted to narrow it down to really put some effort into these areas that our collective identified as kind of most pressing at the time. So those areas are permanent housing, data utilization and quality, equity, landlord engagement, and lived experience representation. So we developed those 5 priority areas, and then under each of the priorities, we developed some strategic goals, more measurable goals to address some of these priority areas. So in your packet, you have my slides, which covers our strategic plan, as well as the actual PDF version of the strategic plan. So when I'm going through some of the information here, I won't read every point because I'm sure I'll ramble on forever, but you have it too in your packet. So just know that, you know, if you're looking at it after or have questions after today that don't come up, please feel free to reach out to me. Or you're also welcome to join and sit in on any of our meetings. So as far as permanent housing, access to permanent affordable housing is a key component in our continuum of services to addressing homelessness. You know, people who are staying in an emergency shelter or transitional housing or who are unsheltered in those continuum of services, is if there's not accessible affordable housing, we're running into some barriers with moving people out of shelter or moving them from an unsheltered situation into permanent housing, and that's always the goal. So that was one of our focus areas. And then our first 2 points here and some of our strategies for how we're going to address this, there is a certain number of vouchers, permanent supportive housing vouchers, that we have available here in Champaign County. So we want to look at additional funding streams to see if we can't increase some of those vouchers. So that's where those specific numbers are coming from. Every year, our continuum does what we call a housing inventory count. And so that is an annual count of how many emergency shelter beds we have in Champaign County, how many transitional housing beds we have in Champaign County, how many permanent supportive housing beds we have. And so we do that every year and can kind of see from year to year, are there increases, are there decreases, and where are the needs? Point 3 is just advocating for an increase in low-income housing credit developments through presentations to kind of share our strategic plan and the need for permanent supportive housing. So that's what point 3 is addressing here. So those were our main focus areas and strategies for permanent housing. For data utilization and quality, we use several key pieces of data One I already mentioned was the housing inventory count. We also do an annual point in time count. That is a count of all people currently experiencing homelessness on a specific night. It has to be done the last 10 days in January. So we have a large collective effort of volunteers who go out and to designated different geographic areas and try and identify people who are unsheltered. And we collect some information from them if they're willing to participate. And then we also, for that same night, work with all of our shelter providers to see how many people stayed in their shelters on that same night. So that's data we've been collecting for years. And so we can also see, again, it's a snapshot, right? I mean, there certainly are people we can't capture or don't capture, but it's a good tool and snapshot of what homelessness might look like in Champaign County, and we can compare that from year to year. And then also, many of our organizations, our provider organizations for homeless services, use a database called the Homeless Management Information Systems, or HMIS, and we're able to pull data and run reports on a variety of different key points and kind of see, where are their gaps and where our needs are. And so with that in mind, we have some specific goals about increasing the number of organizations who use HMIS, because that data really helps us to look at a bigger picture collectively, and we can really use data to inform our decisions and funding, which is very important. We have some other items in here with relation to our coordinated entry system here in Champaign County. We also want to, and we do this, but continue to use some system performance measures in HMIS. When I say system performance measure, that's HUD language, but really for an example of what that means is we can look at how long people have experienced homelessness, for example. We can look and see, is this their first time experiencing homelessness? And that's really helpful for us as a community to know. Are people, staying in a shelter for really long periods of time before they move into permanent housing? Like, what is that timeline like? And that's just one example. So we want to continue to utilize that data to inform our funding decisions. And then I'll just, since I want to be mindful of time. The other thing I just wanted to point out, we want to also get better about sharing data and getting our full membership to really engage and look at and understand the data that our executive committee looks at frequently. And we do share the data with the full membership, but really have more training and education about the data that we have available with our membership. Equity is a huge part of our strategic plan. For example, in some of the statistics that I have here on this slide, in Champaign County, Black people, for example, are overrepresented among individuals and households experiencing homelessness. And the data that I referenced here, in our 2023 point in time count, so that was January of last year, Black people made up 63% of those experiencing homelessness, despite making up 14% of the population in Champaign County. So there's definite equity issues that we want to further look into and see how systemically we can address those. So some of the strategies that we're starting with here. Number one, this is already underway. We've started the initial stages of a racial equity analysis, and that's actually where I did some comparison of our point in time count data, broken down by race, for example, that I shared on the previous slide, and seeing, hey, what do the statistics look like, and what is our point in time count data showing? And there's several more steps of how we can use then the data from that HMIS database and look at performance measures to further break that down. So that's the next step we're going to be taking. We want to do some more coordinated annual trainings to our full membership on different issues such as non-discrimination and diversity, equity, and inclusion. Some of these are already underway as well. And then I think the other thing I just want to highlight, we want to look at, we have an approved collective policy on the client grievances, for example, but we want to look at that, see if it might, you know, might need some improvement and tweaking to make sure that there's a collective policy for individuals who've been served in organizations who might have a grievance and that we're all on the same page as a continuum and how to address those. And then landlord engagement, obviously, in many of our permanent supportive housing programs and housing voucher programs, we need to have, you know, buy-in and engagement and good relationships with landlords. So that's a huge piece. Many of our organizations of our membership, you know, have work with landlords routinely for different housing programs. But we really like to, at one point we had, I think maybe one or two property management agencies participating as members on our continuum. I would love to see that too. And just really try and have more engagement there. Number one has already actually been funded through the Regional Planning Commission, the Landlord Risk Mitigation Fund. We also wanted to do some focus groups with landlords to see what concerns do they have, provide more education about our funded organizations, not just our funded organizations, but homeless services organizations and what kind of different rental assistance and voucher programs might look like. And then some of these, for example, number five, I'll just touch on quickly. Last year, we partnered with Housing Action Illinois and had a workshop, which was great. It was about source of income protections. In Illinois, there was new legislation in last January of 2023, I believe, where you couldn't discriminate based on housing vouchers, for example. So if you can't say as a landlord, no, I don't take vouchers. That's now illegal in the state of Illinois. So we partnered with Housing Action Illinois and did three workshops, one for our membership, one for tenants or clients, and then we also did one for landlords. So we want to continue with that sort of education and training. And then finally, lived experience representation. This is really huge. We want to make sure that we're elevating the voices of people with lived experience of homelessness and not just participating on our CSPH, but we have approved two seats on our executive committee specifically for people with lived experience of homelessness, and we want to use their expertise and experience if they're willing to help inform local our policy and our strategies and our efforts in addressing homelessness. So we're working on some of these already. We recently developed kind of a position description, if you will, with some information about what participating on our executive committee would look like so we can get that information out to our agencies and see if they have any clients they've served or anybody that they know or themselves who've experienced homelessness, if they're interested in participating on our CSPH and our executive committee. We also recently we're working on stipends also and compensation for people for their expertise and participation and sharing their knowledge with us. So that's another one of our strategies. Biannual focus groups for people with lived experience of homelessness. We've used that information from the focus groups to inform our strategic plan, and that's been really beneficial, just learning what are people's experience, what went well, what didn't go well, what do they have recommendations for areas of improvement. And then also we've talked about CSPH member satisfaction surveys so we can continue to improve. So my last slide, I promise. These are just some of the kind of key upcoming priorities. The point in time count and the housing inventory count, the point in time count has already happened, but we're in the process of looking at the data, compiling all the data. Once that is all kind of put together, we always do a press release and share with the community and stakeholders about what the 2024 point in time count data looked like compared to last year too, so stay tuned for that. We are participating in a quality data collaborative, which fits in perfectly with our strategic plan. We're one of five continuums across the state of Illinois, working with a company called Community Solutions with ideas to help improve our data quality. And then finally, we're incorporating these strategic plan priorities as key areas in our meetings, so it's not just a document that's been approved and we never look at ever again. So that is all I have. Thank you so much. Any questions?
I just want to say how exciting it is to see all of this quantified in such a effective and tangible way. In my day job, I'm a housing case manager at Cunningham. Mm-hmm. We've been on Zooms together, right, but right. Never met in person before.
Yeah.
And I just want to, I guess, verbalize how much more cohesive all of the services in our community aimed at this population are than when I started there, or feel to me from my lens, and just how exciting that is and how many more people I think are being effectively served because of it. So thank you for your work.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And I would agree. I just really quickly, I had originally been involved in different capacities. I worked in homeless services for about 15 years in Champaign County and had been involved with the continuum initially in 2010. And the level of collaboration between organizations, yes, there's always room for improvement, but the level of collaboration that I've seen and what you were talking or speaking to is really been great comparatively. So that's been a huge positive and then obviously beneficial to those we're serving.
Hi, I have a question.
Yeah.
First, thank you for being here.
Sure.
I liked your presentation a lot. Now, is this geared toward minorities only, in particular African Americans, or is this countywide? It doesn't matter.
Yeah, no, the countywide, really, yeah, so we're really focused on any people who are experiencing homelessness. And as far as the equity component of our strategic plan, we're really looking at Black people, people of color, and then LGBTQ populations just because of the disproportionate rates they experience homelessness. But that's not, I guess it. We can be more broad and comprehensive, but that's kind of some of the areas we started to look at.
That was going to be my next question. You know, it seemed as if it was geared toward minorities because African Americans were the only population that you brought up in your slides. So having said that, because you just answered my question, can you just share why the population of African Americans is so high here in Champaign County for homelessness? Just for my personal education, but others may want to know, because that's a high percentage.
It is. And honestly, I don't know that I can answer that right now. I think through some of the analysis of data and this racial equity analysis that we're doing and really looking at are comprehensively about the different organizations and the data that we're serving, I think we'll be able to get a better handle on that. Because I don't feel like I can give a tangible answer right now. And that's kind of what has spearheaded some of this. But I really appreciate the question.
Thank you.
I had a question about the point in time count. Mm-hmm. Is that just in Champaign-Urbana or is that countywide?
Oh, it's nationwide.
Okay.
Yep. So HUD requires that continuums of care do the point in time count at some point during the last 10 days in January. So it's also interesting to see, just for example, I participate in a statewide call with other continuums in Illinois, and just kind of anecdotally, I'm like, looking at our unsheltered numbers so far, I'm like, hey, what are you guys seeing so far from your point in time count? So it's interesting to kind of compare that community to community. And we then submit all of our documentation and reports to HUD, and then they publish them. So you can run reports and see any counties, any continuums of care, point in time count data from the HUD website. You're welcome.
Oh, I'm sorry. Just one more question. I meant to ask you.
Sure.
When I was on a roll a few minutes ago, but I didn't. Assessments. You brought up assessments, and I wanted to find out which assessments are you guys using. Like, I'm just curious. Is that a part of your data and utilization?
Yeah. So, okay. And I'm not sure if this is what you're getting at, but this is what came to mind. So we have a coordinated entry system, and so we have partner organizations that provide emergency shelter, transitional housing, who can refer people to a program funded by RPC or funded through RPC called Centralized Intake. And the purpose of that is so kind of a no wrong door approach, so people don't have to go and complete intakes, you know, with a million different organizations, and kind of streamline access to services. Right now, this assessment that we use for that is called the VI SPDAT. It's essentially kind of like a vulnerability index. So those who are the kind of most vulnerable are prioritized for services. For example, if somebody is unsheltered, sleeping outside, they would get, there's other factors too, but this is just a kind of a snapshot. If someone's unsheltered, they might get priority versus someone who's, you know, safe in an emergency shelter right now. But I, with that being said, There are some concerns about the VI SPDAT. So continuums of care across the state, or excuse me, across the country, we're using this assessment tool. And then researchers discovered, I think in the last couple of years, that there were racial inequities and biases with the assessment tool. So right now we have explored two different other assessment tools. And so actually next week I'll be presenting to our coordinated entry committee of our different organizations on the two tools that I think would be beneficial. So that's on our kind of goal to work on replacing within the year.
I think you can read my mind. Because one of the reasons I asked about assessments was because you said that 63% of your population is African American, and most of us know that are in the field that they are, most of the tests are biased. And so I wondered how you were getting around that bias in
right.
your assessments to say that they qualify for homelessness, or I'm sorry, I'm freezing, or that they are even homeless when the tests are actually biased that you're
Absolutely.
Using toward African Americans. So
it's
thank
you. Yeah, no, it's a great point. And I think there's also, you know, even in replacement training and education of implementation of the tools. And if you're looking at a tool that's focused on vulnerability, I think sometimes when you're asking questions of, you know, really personal detailed questions, you know, people might not want to be forthcoming because they think it's going to negatively impact them versus the opposite of something might be available for you sooner. So I think there's also just that training and education piece of the staff implementing the tools too. Thank you.
I just wanted to thank you, Mrs. Harmon, for the presentation, and thank all the board members for your thorough questions. I really appreciate listening to all this information. I did have a few other questions. For permanent housing needs, what ballpark is the need for the whole county? Like we, mm-hmm. you know, you say you have, we have, we increased, I mean, I love that we increased the permanent vouchers for mm-hmm. kids from, with families with kids from 44 to 60, mm-hmm. which is a huge jump. And from people without kids from 67 to 80, that's 140 vouchers mm-hmm. in total. But what's the total need for the county out of ballpark? Like, is it like 1,000?
Yeah, I don't.
Like
so
500 or?
I can't. I don't feel like I can answer that right. adequately right now. Just those. The increase in those vouchers will be very beneficial, but that's not nearly enough to address the need. You know, and just in general, there's a lots of different types of voucher programs. Mm-hmm. Some are time limited, a year, 2 years, or maybe it's through the housing authority and it's a move to work voucher, or, you know, there's a lots of different types of vouchers. But I think still there's a large disparity between people's income and the cost of housing. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a problem nationwide, and it's just something we've been talking about and that obviously we're concerned about. Because people need to be able to pay fair market rent. So it's it's going to be a challenge, so, honestly.
Just kind of generally speaking, would you say this is not even half of what we need, right?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And then, you know, I just wanted to comment on, you know, for homelessness, especially for children, as a pediatrician, you know, that not just has, you know, a short-term effect on an individual for a child, that has it's an adverse childhood experience mm-hmm. that will have long-term ramifications on their brain development and how they react with the rest of the world for the rest of their life. And so, you know, being able to increase those vouchers is vitally important, especially for children and people with families. And so, you know, I'm really happy that we're able to do that. I think obviously we all know nationwide there's a huge shortage of housing, affordable housing. You know, we always talk about building more residential units, and usually when counties or cities talk about it, they talk about it as if they always think that these big investors are going to come in and build these units, and they're going to put some in there for people that are low income, and even places like Chicago, they we'll do that, and then instead of doing that, those investors, the developers, they pay the fine for not building the low-income housing within their units, and instead just build all luxury homes or luxury right. housing units within that. So I really hope that, you know, Champaign, Urbana, Rantoul, other places, when they do give these, you know, whatever they do, if they want to go the route of the low tax incentive. Or, you know, I think some places will do. I'm forgetting what the name is, where they no longer increase the tax for an area, a TIF district, for an area right. That they don't make it so that those developers don't develop the low income housing that is required of the area. Because
right.
you know, every city, every county is going to have a spectrum of classes of people with different wealth and poverty and. We need to be able to live cohesively as a community, as a healthy community that has healthy housing for everybody of all social classes. And so that's really important. And, you know, just like Mrs. Liggins Chambers was saying about the disparity in why, you know, the black population in the county is experiencing homelessness at such a high rate. You know, it would be nice to be able to get some kind of survey of, like, are they having, you know, sudden financial crisis? Are they having barriers because they do have the funding, but their rental barriers because of racism within landlords giving them letting them rent in general, or just, you know, loss of a job, loss of a previous home, you know, if they were, you know, had a fire in their home, if they're a victim of domestic violence, or they have some issues with recent incarceration and being able to find housing because of that, more mm-hmm. discrimination based on race from that. And then, of course, there's the, you know, LGBTQ community, right. but, you know, I don't know if for some reason they may have higher rates of homelessness within that community for that subgroup as well. So, I mean, that'd be interesting. It'd be good to know so that you can then find ways to mitigate those issues. Because if you know what the triggers are for the homelessness, then you may be able to obviously Absolutely. Intervene before they become homeless in the first place. So.
Absolutely. Thank you for that input.
Is it that we actually have a homeless situation, or is it that we don't use the resources that we have adequately? I mean, every time I drive by and see these buildings down here, there used to be a nursing home, and we still have homeless population. The buildings, we have some, I mean, I think this county, we do have some spaces available, but we run on a scarcity model, and the scarcity model drives the homelessness. We have the space. I think we have the space, but we're actually not utilizing it. And I know we can't solve that issue because I think it's a much larger issue, and it's a societal issue that we have to be willing to address as a society, as opposed to saying, well, not in my neighborhood, not in my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Whose neighborhood then?
Right.
And then the other thing in our county is sometimes we put people in areas that are in food deserts, where if they don't have a car, they can't get to a place that has food. They can't get their kids to school, you know. And then, you know, there's one area where they can get the bus, but then it's like you see those people then walking down a road that's going, has a speed limit of 45 miles an hour. And it's just very, very, yeah, very dangerous. And it's just, you know, people are trying to put people in our society in a place that's out of sight, out of mind, instead of making them part of the community and building them up so that they become a strong part of the community as well. So,
You know, we could talk about this all night, but I'm going to talk some more. You know, I love that you brought up the old nursing home. There's times, especially when it was so bitterly cold, and I was driving down University, and we have some huge open storefronts that are completely empty. I'm like, oh my gosh, why couldn't we open those doors and let people at least sleep in those buildings? You know, we saw how the old, I want to call it Cheddar's, and that's not right, but the restaurant there by Target and stuff like that.
How oh, there Charlie's?
Some, yes, mm-hmm. How there were some individuals living in there. Mm-hmm. Shame on them, but good on you. At least you are sheltered from the cold and the wetness. And I, too, it breaks my heart when I see these storefronts and we're not using them. And I know it opens up all kinds of liability and where are they going to bathe and things like that. But at least, you know, they're safe, hopefully, for the night. So I know that you're looking through all your data and stuff. You know, I feel like Champaign-Urbana is a very, I don't want to say affluent, but, you know, we're not a poor area. We have the University of Illinois. We have some of the smartest people in the world within this radius. Does it seem like more people are realizing we have a homelessness problem and that, you know, we all need to be part of the solution? You know, I've often talked about how, you know, I was very blessed. I was very fortunate. I grew up in a town of 800 people, rural Christian community. So, like, I'm sure there was a time when I came to Champaign-Urbana and, you know, saw homelessness. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is like Chicago. We won't even get into the fact that it was 800 white folks. But, you know, I mean, I still feel like we have a lot of people who think, oh, not in my neighborhood. Oh, that's them. They're just, you know, abusers and users, and they're not truly homeless. And I struggle with that. You know, I see every day in every community I travel into, you know, people who are homeless and just anything will help. Well, I work for General Mills, so a lot of times I have Nature Valley bars and stuff in my car and things like that. And I've been known to hand them out as I go. And it's very quick to find out who truly is hungry and needs help and who's just wanting a little cash. But I always feel like if they say they need help, I have to do what's right, and that is to try to give them a snack bar or something. So I think it's interesting to see what the numbers are going to show. And I love to see there's so many, you know, you had church groups on here, other community. I think we need to all rally around. This is a problem, and we have to recognize it's happening right here. So
absolutely. And if I could just quickly share too, and just from my perspective, I do think we are fortunate in some ways that we've had, you know, support from the Mental Health Board to fund some of the homeless service coordination efforts, which is greatly appreciated, and also the cities of Champaign and Urbana funding the Housing and Homeless Innovations grant that they released. I believe it was last year or the year before, which is or maybe around $5 million to fund different homeless programs. So I feel in a lot of ways that I think our community and our local municipalities and local government to be aware of the issue and funding programs to help address the issue is huge. And that's certainly not the case in many counties. So I feel, and just kind of talking with my colleagues and peers, I'm like, wow. And kind of, you know, when I share this stuff, they're like, wow, they fund that. That's so cool. I wish that would happen in our community. So I think that's definitely a step in the right direction. And also one of the things that we're trying to do is, and I really do think is a part of our collective and our kind of our group as a continuum in doing more advocacy and awareness, even doing these presentations about our strategic plan. I presented to the Urbana City Council, the Champaign Neighborhood Services Advisory Board, reached out to the community coalition, and just really just trying to increase that awareness and encourage any sort of buy-in and support and learn from other groups too and share the information. But I agree with you, Jane. There does need to be that awareness because there's still a lot of misconceptions about homelessness and what are the contributing factors. I think a lot of times it's seen as an individual issue rather than a basic human rights issue.
Thank you so much, Mrs. Harmon.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. With that, we'll move on to the next item on the agenda, which is the the PY 2025 applications for funding on pages 86 through 91.
Well, that was a fun season. You might remember that we tried a couple things this year that we hadn't done before. First was to give the agencies a little bit over 7 weeks to work on applications as opposed to the normal 5. And I don't think that really helped anybody that much. It meant we could open it right before the holidays, which was apparently no one's cup of tea but mine. So next time around, we might not bother to hurry getting everything approved by November in order to stand it all up by Christmas time. I do want to continue starting a little bit earlier than we have done, but it might still just be in the middle of the holidays and not very helpful to agencies. The thing that we did differently that seemed to make to be really good was not have them due on a Friday, but on a Monday instead. Almost everyone got their stuff done early. There were just only a few who waited to the last minute. That's how I'm wired too. I'd be right in there at 3:30 scrambling and freaking out. But we got a lot of stuff early and I was able to start reading the applications and kind of putting together this chart and the rest of the materials here. It was anyway, there were also a few small things that happened that made it difficult for a couple of applicants. They didn't affect everybody. They were simple things that we have already requested to be fixed or improved in the online system because we can. And that's every year we find something that needs to be done a little bit differently, made better, and sometimes the enhancements cause new problems. So we've asked for the enhancements now so that we can make sure they don't cause huge problems. There were one agency was asking to do something differently that I felt was way too different from normal, but we will talk to them and try to figure out a good solution. They raised some really interesting issues, important issues that point to inadequacies in our current system. So we want to get back to that. And there may be a couple of other big things like that that we didn't fix, but we know we need to talk about. So anyway, that's about the application experience. And now you have a look at the work that's to come. So there are, I think it's 23 applications to review. And then one application was submitted to the Special Initiatives Fund. And so that's 24. Maybe I've got the count wrong. But anyway, I think that's a little less than last year. There's one brand new agency to us and a new application, and that's from GCAP, which has been around a long, long time, so y'all probably know them. To my knowledge, that's the only really new thing, except for this Special Initiatives Fund request. That's also new. So you might have questions about the applications themselves. I don't know a lot yet, but I sent everybody their login and password to the online system. I know it's not super easy to use, so we can print applications for you. We also have created PDFs of the full applications. I can email those to y'all. Just whatever you, however you want to look at these. And if you don't want to look at them too, we created a memo about the process of review so that y'all can decide how you want it to go this year and let me know. So I have, you know, this is just kind of what we've done in the past and the timeline that we've published, but it is not written in stone. You can change any parts of this. And I have a couple questions for you with that. But anyway, maybe you have questions for me or comments or something.
I'll speak. So I've done these a few times, and I have always appreciated the Cliff Notes versions done by the staff. Just because, you know, I'm a busy person, and sometimes reading lots of data, I kind of like, oh, what's the Illini score? So I kind of like the Cliff Notes. So I really appreciate those. And a lot of times I tend to use those when I'm like the first or second presenter. Occasionally, if I have questions, then I will reach out to Lynn or staff and say, hey, can you tell me more about this or something like that. So I always appreciate those. And then I guess another personal opinion I have, and maybe I should have brought this up not in a public meeting, but we do have a member, you know, on our board who's going through some personal things. You know, I don't know if maybe that person would prefer to be like a second reader where they don't feel pressured to have to be the main presenter.
So if you all like that, like you want to keep essentially the way we've done the staff program summaries, that's fine. We can do that. We can make changes to the format, whatever you like. For your own review, have you liked the assignment of primary and secondary reviewers? Does that work for y'all? And you don't know yet.
I was going to say that.
I mean, I personally like it just because I know, because I'm going to extra prepare on those specific ones.
Right.
You know, because it is a lot to go through. And if we're just reading on all of them all equally, it's kind of, the first applications are the ones I'm going through the most, and then I'm trying to really catch up on the ones at the end. But then at the end, you're kind of like speeding through as opposed to like really focusing on the ones you're assigned. And then this way everyone we're having a set, at least two people really looking at those specific ones, and then everyone else getting more of a synopsis of everything, which I like that. And you know, when you read through all of them, everyone's going to read through them all anyways, but you know, it's, you may pick up on things here and there, but if there's at least two people really focusing on that, I feel like it's going to be more thorough.
Do you like the assignment to be sort of random, or do you want to share with me and possibly Leon Bryson what you might be most interested in or things you don't want to touch? And if you've done it before, do you want to see things you looked at last year or something different?
I mean, I have really no preference.
I don't mind random.
I mean, I will take random, but, you know, there are some that I am more, like, passionate about. So maybe I'm going to dig a little bit deeper or something like that. So that might be an idea. And I think that in the past you guys have done a great job of trying to make everybody's caseload equal. But, you know, my word of the year this year is not grace, but I think, you know, if, you know, Dr. John knows, hey, it's going to be really, you know, hectic. Maybe he's like, you know, I don't need 9. If you give me 7, I'm not going to be offended, you know? So maybe if people know that that's a busy time, I mean, Jen, you're on the county board. I mean, you know, I don't know if there's, you know, that time, you know,
I don't know either.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm just trying to, you know, say, I think that it's okay if people say, hey, I'll take a few extra this year, or, you know, oh, wait, you're overdoing
it. I will not take a few extra this year. I will not.
First, when is this due?
Viewing, discussing. processing the applications. So.
Is that so? Well, March 20th is just a regular board meeting. We can bring you back the spreadsheet and even who would be assigned to review, and then other information if you're interested. If there are things that you, I saw that you did some calculations. Like maybe that's stuff that people want to see. But I thought if you want to, you could, that you might have initial questions like, why is this one almost twice as expensive as last year? Things that we wouldn't be ready to answer that sometimes the agencies are right here and they could answer. You don't have to do that at all. For the formal discussion, it would be April 17 and 24. And April 10 is the staff deadline to get you a written, it's a review of the applications, but then you only have a week. So we try to share them with you as we get them done, which is earlier. So April 17 and 24 are two different meetings during which you discuss these.
So I prefer the kids, like Cunningham and early childhood and Rosecrans, the ones that I'm familiar with that make me smile.
Okay. Well, and also, you know, as your career, you know some of these different, you know, measurement things. And, right. and so that where I'm like, what's an ABCD? Yep. You know, I'm just, you know, but, you know, looking for equality and, you know, the up center. Now I can do that, you know, but. But you're going to be better at being like, okay, what are you using to measure things?
So, yeah, they should be scared. No, I'm just joking if you're listening.
No.
I'm just joking.
Dr. Ligon-Stramers, do you kind of understand, and I say this only because I was brand new to the board last year when we did this, and I did not do my homework. Like, Jane saved me. I was like, oh. Do you kind of understand the format now? Okay.
Just kidding. Don't get me, Cunningham. let's see. You'll give us the information on the spreadsheet on the 20th, and then we have to April 17th and then to read, and then there's a week where we have to make a decision. Is that correct?
It's a little, well, and also you can change it. So my plan is I can send you PDFs of all the applications. Everybody can have all the applications later tonight because I already have them uploaded like that or downloaded like that. And that's just, it might be easier for people to follow that than it is to make your way around the online system. But you have access to the online system too. It just, I know it's not super convenient. So you can have those as early as tonight. And then we can start talking individually about which ones you really want to work on. And it's really not, it's not harder than me doing random assignments. It's really not. The trick is making sure that it's not out of balance. Like maybe I just keep assigning things to Joe because it just makes sense. And then he has 16 applications to review and you have none. So I have to be, that's the hard part, is keeping a balance, but y'all can help me with that. So you can have that very soon. And then at the March 20th meeting, there's nothing, you don't have to do anything. But if you have like general questions or if you're already thinking about some of the applications, we usually have a lot of agencies at these meetings who might be able to answer. And if they couldn't, but you want to know something, I could work with them afterwards to get an answer to you. Just if that helps, because usually we don't do anything really with it until those April 17 and 24 meetings, for which I really want to have things to you at least a week in advance. And those are just our staff reviews and to some extent opinions. Okay.
Yeah, and then the first reader is going to be the one that presents pretty much the whole proposal. And then the second reader just will add anything that they, you know, may not have added or seen that they wanted to specifically state. But if the first reader is not present because of illness or some other reason, then the second reader is there to present the proposal.
It'd be cut in real quick. It's awkward being on Zoom here. I apologize. You say you could send out the PDFs tonight, because looking at this, there's some stuff I'm really interested in. You could probably assume what that is. I don't want to see these as quick as possible so I can really dissect them. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions? All right. With that, we'll move on to the draft revised travel policy. I know that we're all so excited to talk about. I mean, it looks great. I have no problems with it. So I am totally fine approving it.
I'd move to approve that.
Second.
any discussion? Any discussion? I don't think I had anything that I marked on there when I read through it. It looked great, very meticulous. So, mm-hmm. I mean, yeah.
So we need to vote on it.
Yep. So with that, we need we had a motion to approve the attached revised travel and business expense policy for Champaign County Mental Health Board and Champaign County Developmental Disabilities Board. And we had a second for that. So with that, we'll have a voice vote. All those in favor, say aye.
Mm-hmm.
Aye. All those opposed, same sign. Motion passes. So awesome. Thanks, Jen. Okay.
We've had it for a week. We don't, you know.
Yeah, right.
We did our homework.
Yes. Now, the next thing is old business, which is the evaluation capacity building project. We have Dr. Is it? Jacinda? Dariotis. Okay.
Well, good evening, everyone. Yay, hump day. Almost over. So we just have brief remarks this evening. So the evaluation project is underway, and we gave the report in the last meeting, so I answered the questions then. We are providing technical assistance to three of the different agencies. It's currently ongoing. We're working on the micro-learning, so those should be forthcoming. We're going to roll them out individually, but we also have started to invite agency representatives who were interested after the GLA session about being part of a working group. And so we have invited 11 of them to participate in a continuous ongoing working group that will help to inform the action plans that we're submitting and that we're underway, so that we can have a continuous dialogue. Does this work? Is it still relevant? Is there something else you'd like to see? Including testing out the micro learnings before they go completely live and giving information on that, as well as a learning community that we're starting to build electronically. So the hope is that we will start a learning community with resources and so forth in a one place that they can find it, and then hopefully having that turn into a community of practice where they're actually sharing knowledge amongst themselves over time in person, or at least in real time virtually, if that's the format that they want. But we want the working group to help inform us too, to make sure that the formats are consistent with what agencies are needing and not overtaxing them, but being a resource and a value added. Exciting, yay. Yay. Yes, I'm excited because I just invited them, and we at least have three who are very enthusiastic, and it was just this week. So I'm anticipating more to want to be part of that process. And we are compensating them for their time because this is added above and beyond. So, but we haven't told them how much because we want them to be invested in it for, you know, intrinsic motivation. But we do want to... We want to recognize that their time is valuable, and that we're making sure that we recognize that. So yeah.
As the kids would say, slay.
They say slay? Oh.
I don't understand that either.
Mm-hmm. So do you have any questions or anything else?
I think it's awesome. Yeah, fantastic. Everything you're doing is great. I love
it. And so our report outs will probably be minimal the next couple of times because it seems like you have a lot to review and talk about. So just so you know, we won't interfere with that process. But well, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. All right. With that, we'll move on to the expo update. Yay. So it's not on Halloween. Or I guess, is that going to be the trick-or-treating weekend? That will be the trick-or-treating weekend, right? Or is it the after?
Urbana always does Halloween as the trick-or-treating, so...
Oh, okay.
We have to have sugared up, overtired kids the next day at school. That's just necessary.
Is there a problem with that?
Joe!
I'm kidding.
I heard Joe volunteer to come to my house on November 1st.
Yeah, I think we already kind of talked about it with the reports, so we can move on to the... Okay, did you have anything you wanted to say, Lynn?
Just that there are the save the dates, yep. The save the date flyers in English and Spanish, but there's also that that report that was created in Munis, that's the accounting system, was Chris Wilson created that. It's an update of the update on last year's expenses. So it's just that Expo stuff tends to kind of dribble in all year, like payments and bills come whenever they come. So we might even have another report on 2023 next month, but I appreciate him doing that just because it does change. It's good to have an idea of what we're spending that money on.
You know, the only other thing I was randomly thinking about the other weekend was, I wonder if you combine two expos together. You know, they had the Comic-Con one a couple weekends ago. You can get a Comic-Con and Disability Expo together. I think that'd be a lot of fun, you know. I mean, it's Halloween. Everyone's dressing up anyways, you know. I think, you know, you guys did an amazing job. Hopefully this year will go very well. Hopefully we'll get more funders as well this year as opposed to last year. It was a little tough on the economy, so hopefully things will be getting better this year.
They're trying.
Yeah. So with that, we'll go on to the next item, which is the PY 2024 quarter two program service reports.
I got a little bit of feedback from the DD board this morning about, like, some of these aren't really that helpful since you can't see the first quarter data, and they don't tell you, like, the volume of service. But what I think is very helpful are when there are comments, and some take, you know, some have to provide comments because there's a requirement in their contract to tell us about collaborations, that type of thing. But some just do, like they're telling pretty interesting details of the programs. So I apologize for the numeric data not being like super helpful.
Yeah, I mean, I think just like a few examples is just like, you know, first followers that, you know, just hearing that they're one of the residents moved into their own home, a second alum became a homeowner on page 139. Yeah. And then they had there's a lot of awesome stories that the group and the residents should be really proud of. And so I just wanted to spotlight that. And then I guess going back to like page 113 with the Champaign County healthcare consumers getting parenting classes of the female inmates at the jail, I think that's very awesome and amazing, you know, progress. And you know, they had an increase in the number of female inmates that they have been serving through the program. And so I think it was just great to see, you know, the progress a lot of these agencies have made and even some of the obstacles some of them have overcome, like the Champaign County Healthcare Consumers with just like all the paperwork for the disability application process, you know, having it get lost when they had to send it through the mail and even having to deliver it in person and a lot of the barriers that they've had to overcome. I just want to highlight all the hard work all these agencies are doing and just how proud, you know, as a board we are of them. And, you know, I know the work they do is not easy and they do it out of the goodness of their heart because they want to help, you know, the community, you know, that we live in. And just want to really just reiterate how proud I am of all of these agencies and how hard they're working. So. Any other questions, comments? All right, with that, move on to the 2-1-1 fourth quarter 2024 reports on page 157 to 173.
So I will admit, Lynn and I had had a little talk, and she was talking. We were talking about what all was going to be in the packet, and she'd brought this up. And so when I started flipping through my packet, I got to these pages. I'm like, what is this? So it was a little, like, overwhelming to me. Plus, you know, I'm at the age where I have to move my book to read. So then I was like, so, yeah. But there's a lot of data if you take the time to go through it.
It's been consistently, you know, this is interesting, you know, there's like times of calls and who's calling, and that is all interesting, and language usage on this page. But, you know, like the big data point is for years, it's been calls about housing. Yep. And utilities are the second priority, and mental health is sometimes competing as second, but housing.
And mental health and housing, I mean, it's this, it's saying.
I forgot to ask Mrs. Harmon, but with the resource bank, are they using 2-1-1? Are they coordinating with them?
She's not responsible for that resource bank. That's a different initiative that's coming through the Reentry Council. But I wondered about that too, like, why not just use 2-1-1? But I think sometimes the discussions of what resources are available are more like, what is your experience when you actually call that? Does this provider really work? Am I right?
I mean, at Cunningham Township, we have called 2-1-1 to say, like, hey, so we're getting calls, you know, about this, and that doesn't seem right. What are you told? You know, we make the calls just to figure out, you know, if there's something wrong or if we need to correct something, and then we do. I think that's your question, but I'm very tired.
So it's more like, you know, like everybody wants to make a resource directory for the special population they're serving, and the perspective of people who've really invested in 2-1-1 is you don't need that, you just need 2-1-1. But I think there is a need for having a conversation about, like, who actually comes through for your people. So if that's the spirit behind a resource bank, I'm all for it. Yeah.
Go ahead. Absolutely. And, you know, that goes back to the whole idea of, like, if the same kind of resources are being tapped into more than two or three places, are we making the best use of those resources? So both, yeah. I see both sides of that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I mean, I think for us, like, an example for me is, like, when we – a lot of us pediatricians started, we called around areas for, like, eye doctors. Said, do you take Medicaid? Called Chittick Eye Center, the eye center. We called Bard Optical, Joan Optical. It's like, okay. So then we made a list. It's like, okay. So when we give it to families, like, here, these places take Medicaid, and tell me if they don't. I was like, okay, this one doesn't take Molina now. This one, yeah. And so, yeah. And then you do that for the dentist, too. And he's like, okay, you go Familia Dental, Public Health Department, and then, you know, Francis Nelson. And then for kids, you can go to four years and older, the Parkland Dental Hygiene Program. And then for counselors, it's like Hope Springs, Rosecrans, ABC Counseling. And it's just like, and then there's a few other places that will see a few Medicaid populations. And then, Carl, you can get sometimes that it's going to be like a six-month wait, and it's going to take a while. And so you build these lists, but then they change every once in a while. They always tell families, let me know if that's not true anymore, and then we'll change that and update the list. But yeah, it's usually like you said, they come into you, and then you have probably a list of places you've referred people, like, oh, you called this place, and if it turns out they don't, then you update your own list.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Maybe one day, just one day, we would not separate eyes, mouth, mental health from health.
Yeah.
It's all health.
Yeah.
I don't want to keep you all here forever, and I'm going to give you like 40 pages or more about my conference sessions, but there really was a huge emphasis on the collaborations between HUD and CMS, where CMS is creating flexibilities for states to provide some housing supports through Medicaid, which is new, but doesn't it make sense? But it's the federal government is really slow to create flexibilities in Medicaid because that's federal dollars going out the door. So they're still time limited and they have to be budget neutral. So that's great talk, but I don't believe it until we're able to access it here in Champaign County. HUD may be a little different. There's an acknowledgement of the relationship between housing and mental health. And so maybe opening up some new voucher programs like the Shelter Plus Care type, permanent supportive housing with services more aligned with Housing First. So, but we'll see, because HUD ends up getting sort of constrained by politics and it's an election year, so I don't really want to have really high expectations, but I think that's where the magic could be. It's just, right? So, just really broad acknowledgement, and that was one of the gifts of this, asking all those different agencies to collaborate on the priorities that they do have in common, that some of this guidance is coming out that states can already use some of these flexibilities. Yeah.
No, you're great. That's good. Any other questions or comments? All right, we'll go on to successes and other agency input. I'll reserve the authority to limit the individual participation to 5 minutes. If there's any agencies that want to speak now, you can raise your hand on the stream. Is there anybody that has their hand up that wants to talk? All right, with that, we'll move on to board-to-board reports. Do we have any board-to-board? No. All right, with that, we'll move on to county board input. Anything from the county?
The county appreciates you.
Well, that is appreciated. we'll move on to the Champaign County Developmental Disability.
Can you ask them that?
Yeah. You get 100% raise right now.
Every day.
Yes.
We get free water.
Free water. Yeah. And then we'll move on to Champaign County Developmental Disability Board input. Is there any input from them?
They met this morning. They had two presentations. Mm-hmm. And those two presentations were on two programs each. So it was a long meeting, but really cool. I shouldn't go into the details, sorry, but it was really cool. So you can watch the video anytime you want or look at the board packet because the presentations are in there too. Anyway, they also approved the travel policy and with no discussion. I think I had shared it with y'all much earlier than I got a lot of input from the auditor's office, the state's attorney, civil division chief, we had developed that in 2018 or 19, and it was already outdated because of changes in the county's practice and policy and in IRS standards. There are some things that have to be different from other county units, like because you all are volunteer board members, your expenses for certain things can be paid. It's the opposite for county board members. So there are just a few things that are very, very different. Anyway. I really appreciate y'all supporting us updating it so that we can be moving more in alignment with everybody else. So. And that's it. I think that's it.
Yeah. All right. Any other announcements? No. All right. I will move to adjourn. See everybody on March 20th.
Okay. Take care. Have a good one.
Recording stopped.